Hi, welcome to the Grave and Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am Paola and I am an alcoholic. I'll be your host for the month of March. And this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grave and Open Meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms, on aagraven.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. If you are new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. Today, this is today's Grave and Daily quote. Vision is the very essence of prudence. And this is from The Language of the Heart, our co-founder Bill Wilson, April 1959. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at agraven.org, or you will find it on the Graven app every morning. This month, the Graven magazine is highlighting AA and the family. And this is an excerpt from the story, Finding the Balance. It is often a struggle to find the proper balance between AA and family. When I first came to AA, I was gone every night and sometimes even on weekends. My family had more time with me when I was drinking. The big book tells us, those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program and willing to go to any length to get it. I heard things like go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and if you drunk every day, then you should go to AA every day. Today, I have 20 years of sober. I thank God for being where I am. AA gives me the tools and the steps, but it does not come easy. I need to stay involved in AA, but I need to remember to be responsible to my family. I need to know I am not God and that I do not have all the answers, and I need to always ask for help. Let's start today's with a reading from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is from chapter 9, The Family Afterward. Those of us who have spent much time in the world of spiritual make-believe have eventually seen the childishness of it. This dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. We have come to believe He will like us to keep our heads in the clouds with Him, but our feet are to be firmly planted on earth. That is where our fellow travelers are, and that is where our work must be done. These are the realities for us. We have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. So, this will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. I love open meetings because there's no pressure. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. And today we have our first guest. I am so excited to introduce her. Her name is Candice. Thank you for being here, Candice. I met Candice through service and I always admire her energy, her light, her smile, and just you have just this positive energy and the way you connect with people. It's just so beautiful. And thank you for being here, Candice.
Thank you very much, Paola. It's so great to be here today. My name is Candice. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And again, thank you for asking me to be a part of this meeting today, my friend. I have a home group. It's 7 a.m. Zoomers. We are out of Idaho, and we meet at 7 a.m. every day at 7 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. So please come and join us. We're an online meeting. My sobriety date is September 3rd, 1992, and I'm so incredibly grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous found me when I was 16 years old. When I was drinking, I didn't know about alcoholism. I didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous. All I knew is that whenever I picked up a drink, I didn't know what was going to happen afterward. I didn't know if I was going to end up in trouble. I usually did. I didn't know if I was going to end up in somebody else's car, in all the sordid places that we end up in. And as soon as I took that first drink, that was when things became very unpredictable. And I found myself in some scary and unsafe places because of that. As a young girl, I started drinking when I was 12, so I didn't have a long drinking career, but boy, was it distinguished. And I didn't realize that my drinking affected other people until one day there was a young man who I went to high school with. That he disappeared for a while, and he was a good source of alcohol, so I was kind of sad that he had disappeared. And he came back. He had an older brother that would buy alcohol for us, and when he came back, I was very excited to go party with him. And he said, I don't want to party. I went to treatment. And I didn't know what that meant. I had some vague idea that people went to rehab or whatever that was. I didn't know. But he said, I went to treatment. And I think you should go to Alcoholics Anonymous, he says. And so this is where my higher power intervenes in my life because my higher power knows how I'm motivated, and I was motivated by a boy. And that is, my higher power working in my life. So I went with this boy to this AA meeting, and I wasn't sure what I was going to find there. I went to this AA meeting. It was in Rexburg, Idaho, and at the time, it was more of a small farming town. It's a college town now, but it was more of a small farming town, and when I got in the room, I had kind of this preconceived idea of what a meeting was going to be like. And I figured it was a bunch of old grizzled guys, sitting around a table drinking coffee and talking about whiskey. And I didn't know. When I went into this meeting room, it was this smoke-filled room, and it was a bunch of grizzled guys sitting around the table drinking coffee, and it was exactly what I thought it was going to be. They welcomed me, and I don't remember a whole lot about that very first meeting, but I do remember one thing. There was this man, his name was Grateful John, and he wore this big old cowboy hat, and he had this deep, gruff voice. And after the meeting, where everybody got up, held hands, said a prayer, and chanted, which really freaked me out, still kind of freaks me out to a little bit to this day. After this prayer and this chanting, he comes up to me and he says, "You keep coming back, kid." And there was something about that that just sat with me. And because I was the girl who was not invited back, I was that girl. I was that drunk girl that nobody really wanted around anymore because they'd seen enough of her. They'd had enough of her and they put up with enough of her antics. So it was something different to be invited back somewhere. And after that meeting, I didn't go back for a while. I started dating this boy, and this boy did a very public breakup with me in front of all of our friends. And I had stopped drinking because there was something about that meeting that just kind of stuck with me. And I thought maybe I should cut back a little bit. And you know, so I wasn't drinking, and then this boy broke up with me, and life was just a mess, and I felt lonely. And so I ended up going home and taking all of the pills in my parents' medicine cabinet. My mother, my sister found me kind of almost passed out. And she called my mother at work and they took me to the hospital. And I got the lovely experience of drinking charcoal and all of the lovely things that go with an overdose. And I woke up the next morning and I felt so much pain and humiliation, just shame, just full of shame. And this man's voice came back to me. "You keep coming back, kid." And there was something magical about that because it stuck with me. And I didn't have anywhere else to go. I had shut the door on, you know, everybody was just tired of me. And so I went back to this meeting, and these poor old guys, they had no idea what to do with the 16-year-old who couldn't sit still through a meeting and was up and down and up and down and popping her gum and chain smoking cigarettes. they didn't know what to do with me. And but here's the thing. None of them told me that I didn't belong there. None of them told me I spilled more than you drink. None of them told me that I wasn't welcome. They just told me to keep coming back. They handed me a big book. And I took this book and I sat in my room for a while. And then one night I couldn't sleep, so I got it out. And I opened it up, and you go past all the forward stuff because that stuff doesn't matter. And you go straight to chapter one, right? And I got to the word doggerel, and I was like, I don't know what this crap is. And I didn't connect with it. And so it wasn't until later when there was this woman who she literally rode through town on her motorcycle for a summer, and she saw this poor mess of a girl. And it was just a couple months later after I had actually decided to stay and be a member of AA. And she took me through the book, and she sat down with me and she read the book with me and she interpreted it for me. And I just want to take a pause here. And I got the opportunity to serve as a delegate to the General Service Conference. And it was during the time that the Plain Language Big Book was being created. And when we got the opportunity, I'm a panel 72 delegate at the 73rd General Service Conference. We got the opportunity to read excerpts from the Plain Language Big Book. And as I sat there and I read these excerpts from the book, I cried because my 16-year-old self would have really, really been able to use that message. And I was so lucky that my higher power sent somebody to me to interpret the book for me. But man, I was just hit by the power of the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that came to me through the Plain Language Big Book. And I was so incredibly grateful that that came to fruition. And I think it's such an important piece of literature. Fortunately, I had somebody to walk me through. And she only got me through a part of the big book because she left for the summer. And she left me with this higher power idea. And I didn't know about the higher power thing. I wasn't sure about it. What ended up being my higher power, because I got it explained to me that you can have whatever your understanding is. And I found myself often sitting in my backyard, escaping the chaos of my house, talking to a tree. And we had this big willow tree in the backyard. And there was something about this tree. It just had this beautiful life force and was rooted in the ground and had all of this magic for me. And I believed in the tree, and I believed it had a greater force in itself than I did. And so that was my beginning of a higher power. That was my beginning of an understanding of a higher power. I moved shortly thereafter that. And of course, I found another boy in AA, and we moved to a town just about 60 miles south of where I was living. And I lived with him for 2 weeks, and he had had enough of me, and he kicked me out. A dry drunk is not fun to live with. I wasn't working any steps. I didn't know how to handle life. And so he kicked me out. I didn't know what to do, but I did what I had learned to do. And that was to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I went to an AA meeting, and you all scooped me up. I had a place to stay that night, and I began a journey with a sponsor. And with that sponsor, I learned how to create a relationship with a power greater than myself, and not create it, but allow it to enter me. And we worked through the steps, and I found that I had this connection to, I had a hard time really conceptualizing a higher power. And she said, that's okay. You don't have to conceptualize a higher power. You just have to experience it. And I did. I got to experience higher power. I experienced it through meetings. I experienced it through step work. I experienced it through my interactions with all of you. I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've gotten married. So I like it so much. I've gotten married three times. I've had a lot of ups and downs. You know, a lot of people say, you're so lucky you got sober when you were 16. And I don't argue that. That is, I am incredibly blessed. I'm incredibly blessed that I got the gift of sobriety when I was 16 years old. But I had to go through all that really hard stuff sober. That was like, you know, all the really hard life stuff I had to go through sober. And so thank God I had a program of action, and you all taught me how to walk through the hard things in my life, like divorce and death and a child with disabilities. I got the opportunity to be a mom to three kids, and they had a sober mom. They still have a sober mom. They're all adults now. And they're these just incredible. Oh, there's just these incredible, incredible people. And I feel so lucky that my higher power has entrusted me to share my life with them. And I'm so lucky. The place where I feel incredibly blessed is the relationships that I get to have with all of you. It's all about the human connection. Alcoholism is such a lonely, lonely disease. And Alcoholics Anonymous is about human connection. And that connection cures that loneliness. So if you're new or relatively new, I welcome you. I hope you find something here that helps you and brings you back into the fold of humanness. I didn't feel human when I was drinking. I felt like a shell of a human being. And when I found my place in Alcoholics Anonymous, I found some purpose. I found usefulness. I found service. And it made me the person that I never thought that I wanted to be. Like, I didn't even dream of the person that I have become. So I'm just so incredibly grateful to be here and be with you all today. Thank you so much, Paola, for allowing me to share my story. And I think I'm at the end. Thanks.
Wow. Thank you so much, Candice. That was so beautiful. Thank you. I just love what you share about being a sober mom. That is so powerful, really. And I'm learning more about you. You got sober so young. When you say you started drinking at 12, I have a 10-year-old daughter. So I'm so grateful for the hope and the solution, really. And also, when you share about the plain language book, I have the same experience as a Spanish language speaker. I am, you know, I was born in Lima, Peru, so I speak Spanish and I have that experience too. So thank you for that. So now I'm going to read some things. Thank you. Some announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. You can find it on AA.org. Graveland does not accept direct contributions, but of course, we do have expenses. The best way to support Graveland is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagraveland.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Graveland on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Graveland books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Graveland and your local office. You can also visit the Graveland online store at aagraveland.org. The AA Graveland Carry the Message Project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagraveland.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Graveland Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on aagraveland.org. Please follow Graveland on Instagram and YouTube too. The new season of Our Primary Purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous, launched on March 17th. Season 2 takes listeners on a journey across the fellowship, celebrating milestones, exploring how AA reaches anyone, anywhere, and share stories that highlight the impact of service, self-support, and recovery in action. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch every episode of the upcoming season. And I'm going to introduce our second guest for today. His name is Jack B. Thank you for being here, Jack. I know he had a story published in the February 2026 issue of Graveland titled An Anniversary to Remember. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about you. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you, Paula. I appreciate the invite. Thank you, Candice, for your share. Very much appreciated. I am a big fan of the Grapevine. I happen to have a subscription where I get a hard copy, and then I like, when done, to pass it along to someone who doesn't have a subscription. So hopefully I'm a big fan. In our time frame today, I started experimenting with alcohol and drugs at the age of 12. And I lived as a child from the day I was born till I was 12. Then I experimented and used and abused drugs and alcohol for 8 years. And I got sober at age 20. So I was way older than Candace. And I've been sober ever since. I celebrated my 70th birthday in September. Excuse me. Yes, my birthday is September. My sobriety date is November 4th, 1975. So that equals 50 years. And part of that article, Paula, that you were talking about in the February Grapevine is a little bit about my anniversary, but more about a very unique story in my family. So I won't talk about that. If anybody's interested, you can find it. you know, mentioning that 50 years of sobriety and that it's, I don't say that to impress you. It impresses me though, because a guy who lived to drink and drug every single day of his life till he found this recovery program. But just for fun, if you're not familiar, you can go on the Grapevine app and just type in your sobriety date and it'll tell you how many days you have sober. So I have 18,398 days sober if I make it to the end of today. And the reason I bring that up is that I might know recovery and sobriety longer than most, but I don't know it any better than a whole bunch of people. It's still the same exact principles and steps and things you have to do to stay sober. And I always am a big advocate to tell people or to suggest to people that you stay in the center of AA. You know, if you have 1 foot in and 1 foot out, it's probably not going to grab hold of you. And fortunately, I've stayed in the center of the program since the day I got sober. I've had a sponsor all the time, different sponsors, probably seven over the years. I've had a home group. Actually, I should say my home group is the Peace of Mind group in Coral Springs, Florida. And we meet on Monday nights at 5:30 p.m. I did live in New York throughout my early years. I got sober in New York and moved here about 30 years ago. But anyhow, to tell, you know, to put together 12 years of my childhood, 8 years of my using and abusing, and 50 years of sobriety, I got to do that pretty quick. I've recently been thinking about this nature versus nurture thing. A few highlights why I believe it's a nurture thing for me. When I was born, my folks were in therapy. I found this out after I got into therapy and many years in recovery. My folks were headed for divorce when I was born. 5 years later, when I was 5 years old, my mom's drinking was, they had gotten divorced. And my mom's drinking was so severe that my dad got custody of five boys in 1960. And fathers never got custody of children way back when, unless, and again, the neighbors were calling the police department saying, you need to get those boys out of that house. They're not safe. So it wasn't my dad's wish to take on five boys. He was in his 30s and trying to start a big time business career. So he hired a whole bunch of different people to take care of us. People who had no business taking care of children. These were people who walked around the house with rulers to keep us in line. My dad used his back of his hand or his loud voice. He was a World War II veteran. So when I say nature versus nurture, I was a terrified kid. I mean, I was terrified from whenever I can remember. I grew up in fear. When I went to bed at night, scared to death, there was nobody there. I bit my nails till they bled. I rocked myself to sleep every night. And I was just full of holes. And to fast track it to, well, you know, some of those other nature versus nurture. My dad was married four times by the time I was 14. He kicked every kid out of the house by the time they were 15 because he couldn't handle adolescence. So he just sent away to boarding school. And When I was 14, he sat me down and said, "You have to make a decision, but you can't live here anymore." His fourth wife was 24 years old. She happened to be one of our babysitters. He was 44. We didn't get along too well. We were on the kitchen floor in fist fights off and on. And so he said, "You can go to boarding school or go live with your mother." And interesting thing there is that that was 1970, my mother got sober in AA in 1966. She died with 33 years of sobriety in the year 2000. So she was 4 years sober. And when my dad said, "You can go live with your mother or go to boarding school," I thought, "Oh my God, I've just died and gone to heaven." Because going to live with my mother was now going to a home where there was absolutely zero. Well, I had choices. So I had choices whether I wanted to go to school or not. I had choices of whether I wanted to come home at night or not. My mother was basically the opposite of my dad. She didn't use fear. She didn't use violence to keep me in line. And I went off the deep end when I moved in with her. I mean, the deep end with drugs, alcohol, crime, criminality, breaking, bruising and hurting and killing relationships. I mean, it was horrible how I dove into addiction. I mean, what happened to me when I first found out what alcohol and drugs could do in my body, it filled all those holes. It gave me that thing that I said, "Wow, you know, I'm okay now." I was never okay till I found drugs and alcohol, mostly alcohol at the end. But having absolutely no, I could make the choices now. I stopped going to school. I suffered from something called CAD. I'm not sure if any of our listeners or viewers had that as well, but CAD was a condition I called classroom attendance disorder. Basically, I got left back in the ninth grade three times, and it wasn't because I couldn't function, although I wouldn't function well in a classroom. I never went to school. So I did him a favor and I quit. So by that time in the ninth grade, I was in my 10th school. That was basically, again, a part of my nurture childhood where basically I was the new kid every year going to a different school. Terrified me walking into the fourth grade, the fifth grade. And I'm like the new kid again. So again, this is when I hit 12 or 13 and that first attention of chemicals, alcohol went into my body. I was able to function somehow. So I lived for it every day. I lived to drink. I lived to drug. And I had absolutely no consequences for any of my behavior except jail. I went to jail four times. My dad continued to bail me out. And after a while, he said, "We're done with that. You're on your own." And to fast track, I mean, again, it's very short a time to tell anything more in my drinking story. But probably the most important part was that I love to drink alone because people began to question me. "Why are you drinking so much? Or you just had two. Why do you need another?" A girlfriend of mine who I wanted to marry would question me. And I love to drink alone because then nobody's around. But the last year of my drinking, age 19 to 20, basically, I can remember every day being in such a desperate place of isolation, loneliness. It's all described in the big book. The sense of impending doom, just all of that stuff I identified with. But I thought about suicide on a daily basis. And I thought the only way out of this insanity is to end my life. I mean, because I was living inwardly, my life was so full of shame and guilt and remorse. And some people who, in the beginning, I remember after I got sober, I started to compare and go, "Wow, I never had a blackout." It's a good thing I never had blackouts because I remembered everything I did, everything I said, every person that I hurt, the girlfriend that I said I wanted to marry, roughing her up in violent rages when she would say something or do something. And I would look in the mirror the next morning and I couldn't deal with the shame. I couldn't deal with the guilt. I remembered everything. And I had some degree of feeling inside like, this is so wrong. This isn't me, but I can't stop it. And so As I mentioned, my mom was now sober for 4 years. I had been to an anniversary or two. I knew what AA was. There was literature around the house, not that I was picking it up. But I'd go to her anniversary and leave the moment it was over because I had no business being there. But so I knew about AA, and I remember that morning I said to my mom, I said, do you think I could go to an AA meeting? And this was her question. She was AA by the book. She says, do you have a desire to stop drinking? And I said, yes, which was an enormous lie, probably the biggest lie ever told, because a desire to stop drinking, if I don't have alcohol, there's no point in living. So what about, no, but I had picked up a pamphlet at a meeting. I went to one other meeting a few weeks before that. And I picked up a pamphlet, and it's still out there. I'm not sure if it's the exact same stories, but it's called Young People in AA. And maybe Candace read that too, because she was a young person in AA. But there was one story of a young girl. She must have been, I don't know, 20. And the quote at the top said, I decided I was simply going crazy. And when I saw that, I read that. And that's what I thought was my problem. I thought mentally I was losing it. And I was never going to want to give up drinking. That's the only thing that keeps myself together. And so I remember that pamphlet was very important, because when my mom said, you have a desire to stop drinking, I said, yes. No, I didn't. But I went anyway. And the first meeting I went to, actually the second meeting, there was a young man. He was 22 years old. He was sober a year and a half, and he was telling a story kind of like I'm doing right now. And I was so in awe and so impressed with this young man. And I asked him after the meeting, could we talk? And he came up to my house, and he was still there 2 hours later. We were talking. And at the end, he goes, you want to go to a meeting tomorrow night? And I said, yeah, I think I do. Wasn't quite sure. But I said, yeah, I do. And that began my journey. I did not know that that was going to be the start of this journey of 50 plus years. That wasn't the plan, but the Fellowship of AA taught me through the steps, through a sponsor, and through many different things that my life was way better without drinking. And now I don't have the compulsion, the obsession to drink. It just was lifted. And that's what happens. We read that in our literature too, that it just is taken away from us. I was just on, I want to watch the clock here. I was just on a vacation in Patagonia, which is in the southern part of South America. And I was with 22 people on a trip, and 21 of these people were drinking, including my wife, every night. Wine, pairing it with food. No, wine, drink out of the bottle. This one lady who had heard I was sober in AA, and I barely knew her, she leans in and goes, this must be hard for you, because I can't drink. And I said, it's not hard at all. I've been given the freedom from active alcoholism, and I can be anywhere. I am free. I've been given the freedom. I'm having a blast. I'm laughing. I'm having a great time. So yeah, that's, you know, the gifts that Candace talked about, that's one of them. I actually have two kids in sobriety who have now given me 5 grandkids, and they've grown up having a sober dad, which is really amazing. Candace she almost started crying when she was sharing about that, but I can do the same thing. I can start crying if I think about one of the gifts that if I left this earth tonight, I raised 2 kids in sobriety, and now I have 5 grandkids, and my children drop off their grandkids at our house for the weekend. Well, if dad is drunk, dad doesn't get the kids, or grandpa is drunk, the kids don't get dropped off. So yes, gift after gift after gift. And that girl that I told you that I used to rough up in those drunken rages, and her dad said, you'll never see that kid again because his name's in the newspaper again for another criminal behavior. He actually paid for our wedding after I was 2 years sober. So it wasn't me. It's AA. It's what the program gave me and showed him, wow, this guy has changed. And so that little girl and I are now 48 years married. We work a program together. She's not in the program, but we work a program. But that's another gift. And so I think time-wise, we have to watch the clock. I really appreciate this opportunity. I'm going to just share one last thing. When I go back to New York periodically for whatever, I get together with seven other guys who all got sober in the 70s. And every one of these guys, and I mean this, every single one of them has a home group, sponsors people, is a greeter at the door at their meetings, and they haven't relapsed. Not that relapse has to happen for some people, but we had 377 years of sobriety the last time we met. These are people who were in the back of police cars on a regular basis and doing all kinds of other types of behavior. And lastly, here it is. I promise this is last. I've been ending anytime I share, I've been ending it with this because I do get people that say, "You're how long sober? How many? And you still go to meetings?" And I do. I go to my home group every week. I just tell them, yeah, it's actually this, what Dr. Bob said in his story in the big book called Dr. Bob's Nightmare. And he goes like this, it's a quote, "I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned from others who want it and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. One, sense of duty. Two, it is a pleasure. Three, because in so doing, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And four, because every time I do it, I take a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip." That's all I got. I'm grateful. Thank you. Peace out.
Thank you so much. What a beautiful story. Thank you for being here. I love what you share about your mom being sober. It's the second meeting that really impacts me when a story like that happened, you know, like everything changed because mom got sober and so much hope. And also staying in the middle of the AA bed too. I remember I didn't understand what that meant. And I'm so grateful for that today, that it's just a feeling that you know when you're not. And I just want to always be in the middle of the AA bed. And now I'm going to invite Candice to close us the meeting. Oh, first, please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it is also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. Now I would like to invite Candice to close the meeting with a prayer of your choice.
Thank you, Paola. Hi, everybody. My name is Candice. I'm still an alcoholic. And because we can never do this thing alone and we can do it together, I'd like to close with the we version of the Serenity Prayer, if you would, please. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Candy. Thank you, Jack.
Take care. Thank you, guys. Take care.